Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the SNC-Lavalin Q3 2012 conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Friday, November 2nd, 2012, at 2:00 P.M. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin, Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin 2012 third quarter conference call. With us today are Robert Card, President and Chief Executive Officer, Ian Borne, Vice Chairman of the Board, and Gilles Lavernée, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on our website, which we will refer to during our call. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit yourself to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have the opportunity to ask questions. You're welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind listeners that, as detailed on slide three, certain statements or comments made during today's call and slide presentation may be forward-looking. Such statements or comments represent management's best judgment and expectation as of today's date, are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, which are described on slide number three and cannot be guaranteed. I would now like to turn the conference over to Robert Card.
Merci, Denis. Thank you for joining us. We want to extend our hopes for a speedy recovery for those who may have been impacted by the recent storm. It's been an exciting month since I became President and CEO of SNC-Lavalin. In that time, I've been visiting our offices, meeting clients, business partners, shareholders, rating agencies, and hundreds of employees, including the broader senior management of the company. I've attended dozens of briefings on ethics, safety, security, risk management, internal audit, and finance, as well as our business operations. Although I'm not yet an expert, I feel I'm getting a good sense for the company and its opportunities and the needs of our clients and partners. I'm pleased to say that the hopes I had when I accepted the job have all been exceeded. It's been a pleasure to see the terrific people we have and the breadth and depth of their and the company's capabilities. The clients have been outstanding, as has been our staff's dedication to excellence in serving them. Key strengths that brought me to the company continue to frame an exciting potential for the future. Among others, these include the people, capability, reach, and positioning mentioned earlier, our ability to deliver cradle-to-grave project services, especially the financing and developer role, a strong balance sheet and asset base through ICI, a globally prominent position in several key markets such as mining and metals, power, infrastructure, Canada, Latin America, and Africa, and a platform to enable growth in high potential but currently underserved other markets such as hydrocarbons, water, environment, and the U.S. To realize our potential, I can perceive, even at this early date, that there are areas where improvements can be made. Two examples of this include strengthening a cross-company platform to enable us to approach the market and our employees more as a single $7-plus billion company, and to transition from an international company to a more global one by increasing geographical integration of the business. Of course, we've also recognized and embraced the fact that ethics, safety, the environment, as well as other risk-related issues must come first. In this regard, I'm pleased with our progress to date and the commitment of our management and employees. Now I'll hand it over to our CFO, Gilles Lavernée, who will discuss the financial results of last quarter. Gilles?
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon. We turn to slide six, about selected income statement elements. When we look at our third quarter results with 115 million dollar of net income attributable to shareholders compared to 125 million through 2011, explained in part that net income from ICI was higher and lower than net income from excluding ICI, and we'll get into a bit more detail in the next pages. If we turn to page seven and start with our revenues for the quarter, our revenues were at 2 billion in the third quarter compared to 1.8 billion in 2011, and being an increase of 11%. The vast majority of that increase relates to the services activities, whereby we have increased our activities in many sectors, plus the combined effect of business acquisition we've made in 2011 in the latter part and as well in 2012. Gross margin was up in a quarter, mainly because of higher gross margin for services, operation maintenance, and the ICI business, while the margin for the packages were lower as we had lower gross margin to revenue ratio. Selling and general and administrative expenses were higher by $57 million. $34 million of that increase relates to $19 million relates to business acquired in the latter part of 2011 and 2012, as well as $11.5 million relating to certain retention measures that were put in place, and $3.7 million expenses related to investigations. Net financial expenses from ICI were also up, mainly because of higher level of debt from AltaLink, and that was, however, was a loss in the third quarter of 2011 of $5 million from the acquisition of the debenture we've made when we acquired the minority interest in AltaLink. If we turn to slide 8, where we got the revenue and operating income by segment, looking at the lower, starting with infrastructure and environment, having lower operating income mainly due to higher selling in general and administrative costs, partly offset by higher gross margins, which included $7 million from gain before tax from disposal of a subsidiary in the third quarter of 2012. Mining metallurgy had higher revenues and in that regard got better operating income, despite got a bit offset by higher SG&A. Power segment, revenue were up in services and packages. The operating income was lower. As you may recall, we had a $50 million loss in a power project in the second quarter. As well, there is some higher SG&A, and partly offset all of that because of the much higher revenue we are having in the power segment. Hydrocarbons and chemicals, we are having lower revenue, in particular in our package activities, and the operating income has been affected by an unfavorable cost forecast in a second quarter of $17 million from a project, as we disclosed in our second quarter, offset partially by lower SG&A. Other industry, lower operating income is mainly related to lower gross margin to revenue ratio. Operation and maintenance about the same level in line. And lastly, the ICI lower, mainly due to the lower Highway 47 dividend. You may recall that there was a higher dividend in Highway 47 in the second quarter of 2011, and also lower contribution from the FTH investment, offset by higher contribution from AltaLink. Turning to slide 9, financial position. Our cash and cash equivalents stand at $1.1 billion, and we have a free old cash that has been reflected in our MD&A information of $550 million. Our property and equipment from ICI went up from $2.6 billion to $3.2 billion, mainly due to capital expenditure related to AltaLink, as AltaLink is investing or growing is asset base. Slide number 10, cash flows, explaining the net cash generated from or used from the operating activities in the 9 months ended 2012 was $223 million compared to $501 million in 2011. The variance is mainly due to lower income in 2012. Also, the fact that in 2012, we've used some cash for the net cash non-working capital of about $200 million, while in the nine months in 2011, we had cash generated of $53 million from the net change in non-cash working capital. Investing activity, most of it or a large part of it is related to the capital expenditure undergoing with AlphaLink. Financing activities, $256 million. Large part of that, again, is related to increase of long-term debt from AlphaLink. And in the 9 months of 2011, it's a negative of $189 million, and that portion of that relates to the acquisition we've made of the non-controlling interest in AlphaLink. Turning to slide 11, our revenue backlog, we were at $10.7 billion at the end of June, and we're now at $9.9 billion. As we had mentioned in the second quarter when we announced our result, that we were expecting our backlog to go lower. When we look by category of activity, we see that our services went lower compared to June, from $2.3 billion to $2.1 billion, while packages went from $6 billion to $5.4 billion. And lastly, the operation maintenance remained about the same at $2.3 billion. That completes my portion of the presentation, and we're now open for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now conduct a question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset for using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from Yuri Ling from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Maybe I'll start with Bob. You've been in the CEO seat for a few months now. Maybe you can share with us what you're seeing in terms of SNC's approach to prospect identifications and in terms of winning new work, how that process flows, and specifically on the project risk management, and if there's anything that you think that you can do a little bit better or implement some best practices that you've bring over from your prior experience.
Sure. Thank you, Yuri. It certainly seems like several months, but it's actually only been a month, but I've enjoyed every minute of it. Let me go back to front in your question. So in risk management, I'm really quite pleased with what I've seen. I've been through half a dozen major risk reviews so far, and I think the process improvements that Ian, who's with us here today, put in place over his 6 months are really good. I see some opportunities to improve that, but it's definitely well within the framework of what I would expect in a first-class company. In terms of the marketing aspect of prospect generation and management, that one I haven't had the exposure yet. I'd like to be able to give you a clear answer to.
Does the project risk management group report directly to you? And was that always the case? And what kind of size contract would have to be shown in to you to get approval?
The risk management, you know, if we had a position equivalent to a chief risk officer, that person does report directly to me and has a staff that independently engages in this project risk process. In terms of scale of the projects, it depends on the risk factor of the project. So probably a little detailed to get in here, but we consider, you know, what's the contract structure like, where is it, what kind of technology are we dealing with, and how experienced. So we have a matrix that the risk team looks at in projects and then classifies them in various risk levels based on that. And I might further point out that you know, we have a board committee. Ian, we want to talk about that. Ian Bourne can talk about the board's approach to this.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. We've actually put a project review committee in place at the board, which is intended to review projects between $500 million and $1 billion plus the ICI investments, and monitor projects that are either at substantial sort of risk. You may recall when we had the write down on the Cariaga project, for example, that's the kind of thing that would get reviewed by that committee. So there's an opportunity there to provide a little advice and counsel from some of us who've had some experience in those things, while monitoring the progress on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, Yuri, let me just to be clear on the where I tend to want to put the biggest energy though on risk is stopping it in the first place. So when I mentioned this one company approach, embedded in that is a material amount of system improvements in estimating and other processes so that we nip the problem in the bud at the start of the process rather than have to catch it as it comes through the system. So that's my principal objective, is to address it at the source.
Okay, and the second question, if I could squeeze one in. You mentioned that in your remarks at the outset of wanting to become a more global company. What exactly does that entail? Maybe just give a little bit more color on that.
Yeah, I think many people, you know, in describing the evolution of an organization as it escapes the orbit of just its home market, it goes through a period of time when most people would use the term international, and that would be characterized by a company that's largely home-based and extending itself out to do work. A global company like essentially all the big four accounting firms, Coca-Cola and others, GE, are viewed as local where they are because they're based, they have a forward base there and they're local. And you may recall during the Q&A from my first day on the job, I suggested among the many benefits of that is reducing the need for agent representation. Now, that's not by far the only reason we're doing it. I think this is an imperative for a whole bunch of reasons. But what that would entail, without, I would point out, a significant increase in SG&A at this point, is forward-basing more of our executive talent offshore. And so we're going to be piloting that in a region starting the 1st of January and tuning it up and getting it right, and then we'll be appropriately rolling it out broader than that.
Okay, interesting. I'll turn it over. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Anthony Zika from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Sami Abood filling in for Anthony Zika. My first question is regarding the Tunisian power project and Russian hydrocarbon project. If you could please provide an update, maybe percent completed, and if there's any additional cost overruns expected going forward.
The percentage of both projects are about, the Tunisian project is about 47% completed, while the Russian hydrocarbon project is 53%, and certainly was a review with the project manager, with the EVP in charge of that business unit to challenge the estimates and the go forward in terms of the challenges and the risk. And with what we've disclosed, we're certainly comfortable with. But certain risks remain until it's completed. But there was some review at Miniprint on those projects.
Okay, and the recent backlog declines, should we take that as an indicator of weaker revenue growth going into 2013, and when can we expect backlogs to recover to levels like in Q2 or at the beginning of the year?
Well, we need to be sensitive on the fact that when we looked at our backlog in the Q2, certainly it was among the highest backlog we had in the company. So certainly we were starting from a higher level, and we had signed some good projects. So certainly in terms of revenue, it's early to talk about for 2013, as we haven't completed our budgeting exercise, and we're looking into it. So, however, when we compare to a similar period of last year of 9.4 billion, we're now at 9.9 billion, we're higher than last year at the same time. So that you could draw your conclusion on that, and but certainly when compared to June, which was a quite high backlog in June.
Okay, and in terms of operating margins, you know, where can we, when can we expect to see margins overall, company margins recover, and maybe if you can talk about them by segments, where you know which segments are expected to recover and which segments are seeing lower margins, maybe due to competitive pressures, and they're expected to remain at these lower levels compared to historical.
When we're looking at margin overall, when we're looking at what we're accomplishing, for sure the margin are within the range we've been looking for. We can see that on the service it's lower than traditionally what we've had. But the major challenge that have brought our revenue or net income lower has been the increase in the selling and general and administrative expense. And if we look into, for example, the infrastructure and environment, on a year-to-date basis, the margin on nominal are higher, but it has been outpaced by the higher SG&A, that which has drawn the operating income to be lower. Mining and metallurgy were being higher, and power, we got that 50 million impact. So, but overall, I would say that when we look at our margin after 9 months on services, we're at 24.3%, and on the packages, we're at 8.5%. So, you know, it's still some margin that are reasonable when considering what we do have on end and the impact of some Q2 unfavorable project performance.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Frédéric Bastien from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Frédéric.
Question on Highway 407. We've seen a trend of strong dividends coming from the concession, and wondering if the board at 407 has signaled its intentions regarding dividend policy going into next year.
No, there's no indication about that. But certainly Highway 407 continue its revenue growth, and it's you know, in a good cash position, and which permit to have you know, up to now after 9 months we were lower in terms of dividend, but certainly it was a good dividend paid in after quarter end. So that's I think the extent I could say.
Okay. Wondering on the power side, if the Darlington RE2 project is contributing to your results right now, or is it too early?
It is contributing to a certain extent, but they not to, you know, we're not mentioning necessarily project by project.
Okay, well, it wouldn't explain the all of, I mean, wouldn't be that significant with respect to the strong performance you reported there.
No.
Okay. Last question, really question on the SG&A. You had you recorded $270 million in the third quarter. Can we use this as a run rate for Q4, or will we see it increase with potentially a higher volume of activity?
It certainly, as there were some, you know, special thing. You know, we had investigation related and the retention measure that were put in place. The rest, for sure, that we haven't put any target right now to reduce, as we are looking into proposal, and but it's not to say nothing may be put in place for 2013.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. First question for Robert. You know, one of the biggest questions we get on SNC is what's a go-forward run rate on core earnings? And one of the bigger elements that would contribute to that, I guess, is looking at strategy going forward. Just wondering if you can comment after a month on the job, are you looking at a strategic overhaul for SNC, or is it more of a fine-tuning exercise that you see at this point?
Well, sir, it's too early for me to comment, and as I said a month ago when I started, that it would be, you know, sometime next year, certainly by the annual meeting. Hopefully we can do something in front of that. But when I get to be ready to answer, you'll have to understand what you would mean by strategic overhaul versus the other things to know how to put that in context. But I just see, frankly, as I said, lots of opportunities, and so I think the issue for me is just deciding on what is the approach that yields the best results out of all of that. There's no shortage of things to consider, so I'm pretty enthused about it. Sorry, I can't say more yet.
Okay. And then just, I guess, again, a month into Q4 at this point, Gilles, are you seeing a big risk to the mining and power backlog? We saw that it come down year over year in both packages and services. Just wondering, you know, one of your peers came out commenting mining was going to impact earnings next year. Do you have the same fears at this point based on pipeline that you're seeing, or do you see some stability in the backlog?
Always difficult, Sarah, to predict the backlog, and we had always been careful about that. And I think the comment on the second quarter in terms of the emit on the mining and metallurgy side, that maybe we were seeing a slowdown in the industry. However, on the power, there's some good, prospect ahead, and likewise in the mining metallurgy nonetheless. But to predict at this stage, I think it's too soon to predict. And the only thing I could, said again is that when we look at our backlog now compared to what it was September 2011, we're still ahead of the game, and I would say that our prospect level in both sectors still look good in both of them, but in particular in mining and metallurgy, the industry is really one that is not really exploding in terms of investment as we speak right now.
Okay. And maybe just on the retention payments, can you talk about how many individuals that impacts, how deep it is in the organization, and why SNC needed to put those in place?
Sarah, it's Ian. You may recall we talked at both the annual meeting and then at the second quarter conference call, that we were putting a lot of emphasis on making sure that the people at both the project level, where we really had to make sure that we continued to execute successfully, and at the leadership level, where we just didn't want to run the risk of losing high potential people, that we were going to put in some relatively widely spread retention programs, and that's what that money represents.
Is it a one-time thing, or do we have that coming in the next quarters as well?
It is a program which covers some period of time, so there is a little bit of amortization of that in each quarter. So the answer is yes, there will be a little bit more in the fourth quarter, but it's not a new program. It's an extension of the existing program.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Hamza Mazari from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey, it's actually Andrew here. I guess the first question, can you guys just talk to us a bit about the deal with Hitachi to enter the UK nuclear market?
Unfortunately, we can't say much about that other than we're very pleased to be with Hitachi, and they're a great partner.
Okay. I guess then maybe you can just talk to us about what you're seeing from some of the Asian ENCs, your competitors, and how aggressive they've been in, you know, marketplace, particularly in the Middle East.
Well, I think the Asian E&Cs clearly are appear to have a good footing. We're seeing them all over the place, and I've been competing with them strongly in the Middle East for more than a decade, and they've done really well there. So back to the questions I got on strategy, figuring out in our relative position vis-a-vis that, that competition is something top of mind.
Okay, and maybe just one last question on the concession side of your business. Do you see any potential, you know, opportunities outside of North America, more on, you know, the Latin America side or in India? Or are you being more aggressive in those areas?
I don't. There's no particular area pointed to for aggressiveness, but we're casting a wide net. It's a very important part of our business. We're very interested in it. But I'd hesitate to say that we're specifically targeting one area or the other. We're lucky in that we cover a lot of ground with that team. So they've got things going in many places.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Michael Tupholm from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Just wanted to, I know it's been asked a couple of times in a few different ways, but just to circle back on a question about the outlook for new awards and I suppose backlog. I guess sort of a two-part question. Number one, you highlighted or made some cautionary comments about backlog going forward in your Q2 call. Just wondering if you can comment on whether or not things have, relative to then, if things have deteriorated at all, particularly in the mining and metallurgy side. And then as a second part, you touched on power and MM specifically. I wonder if you can talk to some of the other segments just as far as the new award outlook.
I would think the comments we made on the second quarter still hold in a sense that, you know, we can foresee potentially a drop in certain activity. With regards to infrastructure and environment, there is some potential of new awards that are, you know, of a good size. And with regards to hydrocarbons and chemicals, this one, the prospect list is maybe less than what we're seeing for the three other main segments.
Okay. All right, great, thanks. The second question, I guess there's a small gain on sale realized in the I&E segment. Wondering if you can just comment on that, and then maybe more importantly, if we adjust for that gain, it looks like operating margins in I&E, you know, were a little bit better than where they'd been in the first half, but still quite low. Just wondering if you can give us some sense as to how to think about those going forward. I mean, this little bit of improvement we've seen, is that the start of a continuing improving trend, or how do we think about those, please?
With regards to the sale of a subsidiary, this strategically, that subsidiary was not a strategic subsidiary for us. But with regards to the strength of the I&E, as it is really touched by higher level of SG&A, and until either we get more revenue or more margin or reduce SG&A, it'd be difficult to see the improvement significantly into the I&E. That being said, there's good prospect on the revenue side, and certainly that is something that could really help this segment.
Okay, just so I'm clear on that, because I guess you've commented on the fact that you're running with higher SG&A for a little while in that segment now. Is that what's going on? You have a line of sight on a certain volume of work that you're staffed up and ready for, which is why you're not looking to cut that SG&A, and that's how this gets resolved? Or how do we think about it eventually getting resolved in terms of the two sides of the equation?
Certainly, the team is looking into increasing the revenue, and certainly with a new CEO coming on board, they'll have a fresh look at looking into the level of SG&A and whether it's how it match with the prospect of short term, and even not to look only on a short term basis but long term in terms of the capability of that overall segment of activity compared to, you know, the return we would like to get and get back on a more profitable basis in that segment of activity.
Okay, fair enough. And then just lastly, in the last couple of conference calls, you've given us some information on the gross margin percentage earned by category of activity. I think you might have touched on it earlier, but do you have that for the third quarter for services and packages?
Yeah, the services was 26.7%, which included, like we said before, the $7 million on the gain on disposal with subsidiary, and the packages were 10.9%.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Bert Powell from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Robert, just wanted to get your thoughts on the ICI portfolio going forward. I guess I can infer a little bit from your prior answer that this is critical to the business, but I want to just get your thinking on that going forward and tie that back a little bit to your opening comments where you talked about cradle to grave and financing as being part of that, and how the ICI portfolio or the ICI structure kind of fits into that or doesn't.
Sure. I can't reiterate enough times how critical a differentiator that whole business is and the balance sheet effective it is. As I think I mentioned before, how you handle that asset base is an open question that we're looking at. But certainly the existence of it is something that's highly appealing to us, and part of our strategic review is looking at how do we best manage that asset base to grow the ENC business.
Okay, as part of the thinking on that, looking at having it as an entity that has its own ability to source capital?
It'd be too early to comment on that.
Okay. And then just going back to your comment on geographical integration, obviously, I guess the risk platform is part of that, but I would assume sales synergy, project management, and all those kinds of things would fit under that. And you made the comment, material investment in systems. I'm just wondering if you could just give us more of a sense of what the scope of that comment really entails. Are we talking about, a major sea change in systems, infrastructure to underpin what needs to be there to make this a global entity?
Yeah. First of all, let me just be clear. I'm not, at this time, signaling a giant jump in SG&A to do this. So if anybody picked that up, that I'm not committing one way or the other, but that's not in my planning horizon right now to think of it in those terms. I'm more thinking of it in terms of the benefits side. We've got a great start, for example, on our Oracle implementation. There's a question of whether, from a risk standpoint, we should be speeding that up and making that a higher priority than other things that we might do. There's our estimating platform, how many places are estimating and how many different ways are they doing it. To me, every additional estimating node is another risk point. You can hire and retain higher quality people and afford more sophisticated systems if you concentrate those things. So we're marching through all of those systems over the next several months and determining, which ones are the highest priority to support growth of the company, and we're going to allocate our internal capital accordingly.
Okay, that's good, because that was kind of the fear I was starting to develop. And just lastly, Gilles, on the $7 million gain, not that it's material, but is that included in the guidance or not?
It's included in the guidance.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Paul Lechem from CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Just following on some of the last questions, Bob, you mentioned that there's a strategic review on the ICIs. Could you talk a little bit to the process that's ongoing there, how long it's been going on, when there might be some decisions that come out of that process?
Too early to say, but, we have expert advice. I can say that. We have expert advice helping us on this to ensure we clearly understand the value of the assets and that value is being best communicated to you and others, and that we have a clear set of options for different ways we might manage them to the best benefit of the company.
Okay, so there's no defined end date that we might be able to have some of those decisions communicated.
No, again, if I had to just pick one, I'd say I'm hoping it's earlier than that, but the annual meeting, because it's integral to our strategy. So you can't decouple the ICI piece from whatever else we do, because it all has to fit together. So, and again, that's another thing I can't say enough, is you can't, while we separated our reporting, from a strategy standpoint, you really can't separate ICI and E&C business. They're too close together.
Okay. Maybe if I can ask the strategic review question about your actual operating business. Is there a review underway of all the different parts of the business in terms of, you mentioned geographically you'd like to become a global organization, but are you reviewing whether you need to be in all the markets, all the segments that you're in as well at this point in time? And if so, what level of investment you need to be making in those different markets?
As Gilles mentioned, we've already begun that review, and we're looking at every business. I look at every business from how would a shareholder view us investing in that business. And if we can't find a strategic fit for it and we can't show it yields the returns that we need, then we have to figure out what to do about it. I'm not expecting any of them will fall into that bucket. I see, I like all the ones we're in, and I think we can do better with them. So we do have some that you've seen that don't have the yields we'd like to see yet, and we're working hard how to reposition them to get there.
Okay, and same answer as to timing, you hope to have something by the AGM?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Last question, if I can slip it in terms of the backlog, it might have been asked in a different way, but we've seen some competitors who've actually taken projects out of backlog given they've been cancelled. Any concerns at your end about your current $9.9 billion backlog that any projects in that backlog currently might be at risk of removal?
No, we don't have concern at this point of time.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Maxim Sichev from AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just maybe drilling down on the ICI, I was wondering, I mean, obviously the 4-7 Eastern extension will feed some of the traffic to the legacy asset. I was wondering, can you maybe quantify potential incremental traffic that would be fed there, or is that too early to contemplate for the time being?
I think it's too early to contemplate for time being, but one thing is for sure, we are counting that it will increase the traffic on the existing 407. So it's a positive, but to quantify is too early to quantify this stage.
Okay, but I mean it's not a single digit. I mean this is something more meaningful. Is that?
I would love to answer it, Maxim, but unfortunately, it's. We cannot.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. And then maybe just my other question, again, circles back to sort of the base earnings and where they can be over the next couple of years. I mean, obviously, at least in Canada, it is a more competitive environment. There is a lot of macro volatility and so forth. But do you believe you are witnessing a permanent shift in the margin profile for your business, or you feel that, again, with sort of right-sizing the G&A potentially or things overall normalizing, that I'm not suggesting that you're going to be back to kind of 08 or 09 margins, but something more kind of in line with the long-term medians. Is that a fair way to put it?
I would say, what we're looking on the service, for sure, the market is competitive, and we've seen some lower margin. And on the package side, as we've done over the last, let's say, quarters, we've signed some PPP project, and as I was pointing out previously, this is a very competitive environment which drives margin lower. So what, to say on service that there will be some dramatic change from what we are having right now, I would have a tendency to say that what we have been having in 2012 and 2011 is kind of the range to look at. And for the package, we're certainly shooting between the 7% and 10% of margin on the package side.
Okay. So, yeah, no dramatic change there. Okay. That's great. Thanks a lot. That's it for me.
Thank you, Maxim.
Next, we have a follow-up question from the line of Anthony Zika from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Sami Boot again. My question is for Robert Card regarding the, you know, the strategy of expanding globally, and how does that link to, or how do you expect to achieve it? I mean, if you link it to, let's say, the way that the ICI business is conducted and how it brings in revenues for ENC, are you expecting to follow that same format? Are you expecting to monetize any of the ICIs? Is that on the books as well?
I don't draw a connection between the global initiative and ICI. The global initiative is really focused on leveraging what we already have.
Okay.
So just to clarify that, you know, all of our business groups, say, might be operating in a certain country or continent right now. The current governance methodologies, each of those are relatively independent. And so you have duplicative marketing, country management, all kinds of costs, and you don't capture the efficiency of having high-level people who are really well connected there helping direct the resource allocation and prospecting. So the globalization is really more tidying up what we already have than launching brand new beachheads out there.
Okay, and my second question is regarding the Middle East. From your experience, how do you see SNC's positioning in the Middle East to win new contracts or prospective projects?
Well, the Middle East is always an exciting area. At the current, I'd say the last couple years, the quote, mature markets, the GCC countries, have become intensely competitive in the standard business. So most of the companies like us, I know, are looking either to the fringes or they're looking where they already have huge areas of strength. So we like the Middle East market, but we're taking a careful look to make sure that the way we're approaching it makes sense from a return on investment.
Thank you very much again.
Your next question comes from Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, just to follow up on the SG&A, in particular in the infrastructure and environment segment, Robert, you talked about not, you know, letting SG&A get out of control, but is there an opportunity to cut back in the short term to sort of right size, I guess, for the structure that's there, or is that sort of going to take a number of months from here?
Well, it's you know, we're in principally a people business, so when you look at all the transaction costs of managing SG&A, it's pretty hard to turn on a dime. For example, in Europe, you're into a 1 year plus kind of severance, and so even if you were to readjust the entire continent, you're into a year's worth of cost. However, you can control it over the long run, and we're certainly intent on giving the investors the biggest bang for the buck in SG&A space. We're working hard at that now.
Okay, great. And then, Gilles, just a follow-on question. Operations and maintenance margin, just wondering why it's so volatile quarter to quarter. I would have expected these are kind of long-term contracts, and in this quarter it was quite high. And is there a run rate to use going forward?
Yeah, there is different margin, different on different segments of it, and depending on the volume of the different component, it goes in that regard. So it's not like, you're right to say it's long-term contract, so it should attract a steady state, but depending on the mix of whether, for example, you're working a bit more on the PPP contract as opposed to more the public works type of contract, which attract different margin. So depending on the revenue mix, it brings on different margin.
Okay, so from here, I mean, I guess traditionally you've been around 3% earnings before tax. Is that a good run rate to use going forward, or could that differ now that you're into PPPs in a bigger way?
I think what we've stated in the past, that the operation maintenance has been growing steadily, slowly, I would say, and that's what we have in our plan overall with that for the time being until there's changes to to it. But you know, every year we've seen the performance that has been steadily increasing.
Okay, but the margin also, would you say there's opportunity for increase, or is that more steady state?
It all depends again on the mix. If we sign, and I don't want to talk about the different margin we're attracting in the different contracts, but again, depends on the mix of the type of contract we're signing on. So if we have more into one category versus the other, like to be, let's say, more specific, if you have more risk, if you're undertaking a contract with life cycle and longer term contract, so you're expecting to have a better margin.
Or conversely, if you're doing a standard building cleaning services, that's at the bottom end. We don't do much of that and aren't that much interested in it. But you know, the goal is to try to seek out more complex projects.
Okay, great. And then just a final one. Jill, sometimes you've had sort of opportunity to flip reserves on fixed bid contracts into profit as they're completed. Just wondering, is that less of an opportunity now in the way contracts are signed, and is there opportunity for that in the next year where we could see that you come, you know, under budget and you get a bonus for early completion, or you just flip the reserve that's not used back into profit?
Just want to clarify about the words flip reserve. I think we're not flipping reserve. It's a matter of having risk and contingency on project, whereby project manager has the job in general being completed towards the end, have a tendency to say we don't need those risk and contingency anymore as a project, the risks are no longer there, then
right.
they reverse that. So just want not to, I think that's what you meant.
That's what I meant. Sorry about the wording.
Thank you, Sal. In that regard, for sure there is certain projects that will be completed. I would not say, however, that we are in a era that we have many, many projects that are being completed. There are some being completed, and there could be some upside. But I would not qualify it in being right now in an era of a big, large, many contracts of large contracts that are being completed, which would permit to foresee the no need of risk and contingency on given projects.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have time for one more question, and it's a follow-up question from the line of Yuri Ling from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for squeezing me in at the end. Jill, again, back to the SG&A. If we adjust the year-to-date number for all of the non-recurring items that are in there, is that a decent run rate? Understanding that Q4 always has some higher accruals, but is that a decent run rate to use into 13, which would imply, you know, in absolute dollar terms, a tick down in SG&A in 13?
I think it's I understand your question, Yuri. With the leadership of Bob coming into it for 2013, it's something we'll be looking into carefully. Like Bob said, there is priority on certain elements, and despite, you know, we will certainly look into, as you know, to be careful about the SG&A. But amongst, you know, when we're talking about business acquired, for example, that business acquired towards the last part of 2011, for sure that will carry on in 2013, and for sure the retention bonus is not retention measure. It's not something that is necessarily, unless there have been some other decision contemplated, and the investigation is something that is difficult to talk about right now at this moment.
Okay, thanks, that's it.
Thank you.
I will now turn the call over to Mr. Jasmin for closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you all for having joined us today. If you have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Have a nice weekend, everyone. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect your lines.